You're listening to the Ask Drone You podcast. You ask, we answer your drone questions. Whether you're here to turn your passion into profit or you simply fly for fun, we're a community of learners and teachers who aspire to achieve greatness. We are
Drone You.
Good morning, good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome back to another fun episode of Ask Drone You. My name is Paul.
And my name is Rob. Thank you guys for hanging out with us today. We really do appreciate it. Got a few shows on tap today. Looking forward to it.
Yes, as we are on our way to Milwaukee, Wisconsin to film a new search and rescue class and mapping acquisition class. Seems like a lot of people are being asked to do mapping acquisition and the processing wants to be done back at headquarters, which is actually a very fascinating paradigm, if you ask me, because oftentimes people don't realize the mistakes that they made in mapping acquisition until they get to processing.
And then it's too late.
And then it's like, send someone else back out there.
Exactly.
So it's very interesting to me because I think it showcases, again, just the overall laziness on the corporate level management to just go do these things. You know, and I've talked to a couple.
Meaning plan better up front? Is that what you mean?
Have a deeper understanding of how things work. But that it never goes that way until there's a problem or a crisis and then they're fixed. And I only
human
say
nature.
This. It is human nature. I only say this because in the last couple of construction group trainings we've done, trying to explain why this is valuable to a project engineer is like giving candy to a baby. Trying to explain how data acquisition from the sky and drone mapping is valuable to, say, a CEO or an executive manager, which I've worked with now four, it is like poking my eyeballs out. Like, it is awful.
That's a stark difference.
Yeah, well, I mean, project engineers are like, whoa, I can do cut and fill lines, I can measure, I can do volumetric measurements, I could do all this. Like, man, that would save me so much time.
Yeah.
I'm just like, yep. Mm-hmm.
Well, that's where you hope you have a CEO or a COO or whomever.
Who's willing to learn.
Is willing to learn and also willing to trust their people, right? Delegate those kinds of things to the people who get it.
That is so true.
Trust them to go do the work and make good decisions. But that's not always the case.
Yeah, no, you are totally right. I got to say, things are evolving, but I'm also learning that some of the best decisions come from the people below. And you got to have a company culture of trust. You've got to have a company culture where it's a family, where you really enjoy working together with someone. And it's taken me a long time to really understand the importance of company culture. And it's just something that you guys should focus on as well in your companies. But let's not talk about that for too long. I do want to say we've gotten some new reviews and really appreciate it. And it's working. So thank you very much. Our downloads are ticking back up, which we really appreciate.
We do.
So for today's Part 107 recency question of the day, because as you know, Part 107 recency tests are here, and you have to upgrade your license before your two-year anniversary is up. Make sure you heard that right. You have 2 years. So if you took the test on September 11th, 2016, that means you have by today to go retest.
Really? Right. I didn't know that. You have to do it by the day.
I didn't know that either, and I learned that almost the hard way. Almost.
Interesting, yeah, because a lot of licenses, certificates, they'll give you some period past that.
Now, I actually wonder what would happen if you went past that two-year time frame, if IACRA would shut you down, because it's such a systematic thing when you go to a federal testing center. They're like, log you in, IACRA, meh. Okay, the computer upstairs is ready, because the login to the computer is your birthday. So it all works together.
So if that's you and your date has passed and you haven't done the recurrency, we'd love to know.
We'd love to know what happened to you.
What happened to you, yeah.
Probably nothing,
sure.
But probably we would
not.
Love to know.
Yeah.
All right, so today's question. Which of the following sources of information should you consult first when determining what maintenance should be performed on an SUAS or its components? By the way, the irony in this question makes me laugh or giggle every time I read this question. I actually almost got in trouble for laughing too hard during the test. I was disrupting.
I hope that doesn't mean it should be easy.
Okay, I'm going to read the question and the answers one more time. Which of the following sources of information should you consult first when determining what maintenance should be performed on an SUAS or its components? Answer choices: local pilot best practices, 14 CFR Part 107, manufacturer guidance.
Which C.
Yes, that is correct.
Yay.
The irony in it is if you read the manufacturer guidance, it's like after 100 hours, tighten screws. enjoy.
Go fly.
Last time I checked it was like three lines. So, but anyway, let's get to today's question, which is brought to you by our friends. I don't know if we're talking. Who
we're doing? We love the guys at Colorado Drone Chargers.
Sorry, I thought we were going to talk about Sky.
Oh, not yet.
Okay, gotcha. Well, yeah, I love Colorado Drone Chargers. I was actually asking PJ, so I'm headed to Milwaukee. Do you have a quad charger from Colorado Drone Chargers? Because if not, I'm bringing mine. It's just so valuable. You can be out in the field and charge four batteries in approximately an hour and 15 minutes.
Does
sometimes
he have
faster.
One?
I'm still waiting back to find out whether PJ has one or not, because if he doesn't, I will be bringing mine to Milwaukee. If you don't have a quad charger, check out ColoradoDroneChargers.com and tell them that Paul and Rob sent you from Drone U. And if you happen to work with Johnny, make sure you tell him we say hi.
Indeed. Really good dude. And we don't actually have a question today, Paul.
Oh, yeah. I was like looking around like, all right, play the question.
Hit the button, Rob.
All right. Okay, so we don't have a question today. It is hurricane season. We actually have many questions, but we wanted to take a break. It is hurricane season. Hurricane Florence is bearing down on the East Coast right now. And frankly, it means that there are many disaster zones about to promulgate all over the eastern seaboard. Yeah. It currently looks right now as if and we're going to be hitting the Outer Banks area as the main kind of issue. North Carolina, South Carolina, the Tidewater area. That is what I was trying to get at for so long. The Tidewater area. And I only know that because my parents used to have a beach house down there. And in fact, I could tell you that one of the best bars in Kitty Hawk is Awful Arthur's, because I had been there so many times as a child growing up with my dad. Thanks, Dad.
Oh boy.
Anyway, that
it's
being
all coming together.
Yeah.
For me.
That being said, I'm actually really worried. I don't know if you are familiar, Rob, but Old Town Alexandria, where I was born and raised, is already having storm surge from the storm, and it's still 700 miles away.
Yeah.
It's going to be a really bad storm.
A million people, they're saying, are being told to evacuate. It's really awful.
If this happens to you, if you're in this area, or let's say that you want to, help out. You got a drone. You want to go out there and really, really help. What do you do? Should you go help? I mean, is that something that you should take on? Because it seems like it's one of those things that you could end up causing more harm than good. Remember what we talked about when it comes to search and rescue? You think you can be helping out, but you've got to be prepared to look the other person in the eye and say, I may not find your daughter. And, we have to be real about it. But it feels like that there are a lot of pilots that want to help really badly and feel like they're doing a good thing by self-deploying to these areas. I just want to make this really, really clear. You should not self-deploy to any of these hurricane-stricken areas. If you want to help out, you need to work with chain of command. That does not mean you call the FAA. The FAA does not know where to send you. The FAA is not doing disaster relief response. They have no idea what to do. So I think it's really important for you to understand self-deploying really bad. Calling the FAA really, really bad.
So what should somebody do who does have the time, they've got the equipment, the inclination, the experience? Who can they contact to see where help can be offered?
Well, I think that's a good question. I know that Daniel Herbert and his team was working with Red Cross, but he was mentioning to me that it was, again, a very logistically challenging arena. And, one of the things that I wanted to mention is that someone else had talked about, what to do. And if you haven't made contact with people who are involved in these efforts, obviously, like you said, Rob, you need to start making contact. Who are those people? These people could be search and rescue. There's a couple different groups that do this. Daniel Herbert, by the way, which is in humanitarian drones. I think actually that would probably be the very best place to go first for communication. There's a Facebook group called Humanitarian Drones. So it's humanitarian-drones.org. Oh, that's the page, not the group. Excuse me. You can go to that page on Facebook and they'll showcase the leadership there. That page is run by my friend Daniel Herbert. And in fact, he just got back to me. I had written Daniel Herbert, Mark Blacklin, a couple other people who had already been deployed to these hurricanes. I said, look, I want to do a show and I want to explain to these people exactly, you know, what people should do, what people shouldn't do. And he says he's going to have a lot of difficulty scheduling something because of lack of time. Everyone's getting prepared to go out there. But he said if anyone is interested to reach out to them directly. I'm just going to go ahead. Should I give out his email?
Well, he said to reach out to them directly. Maybe they could reach out to... It suggests that he'd be okay with that. But could they just go into this group perhaps and reach out?
Here's what I would do. I think you need to get involved with FEMA. You need to contact FEMA command and figure out, you know, how you can help. But there's a couple keys here. Don't call the FAA. Do not self-deploy. Because the other thing you have to understand is if you go out here and you go and like, let's say you work with chain of command. Do you understand how difficult it is to work with chain of command? There are things that you have to be prepared to do. And it has nothing to do with working with chain of command. It has to do with the environmental conditions in which you have to work. So for example, you have to have your own power. You have to have some sort of communication beyond a cell phone because cell phone service may not be available. Do you have a satellite phone, CB radio? What's going on here? Like, what are you going to use? On top of that, where are you going to stay? Because oftentimes, if you go to a hotel in the area, they're trying to save those hotel rooms for people who are unable to evacuate. So again, by you self-deploying, you could end up causing more harm than good. And that's not something that we want to do, right, Rob?
Absolutely not.
No, it's not. So I would say that you need to get in with humanitarian-drones.org. I think that would really, really help out, number one. Number two, check out the humanitarian group on Facebook. Number three, do not call the FAA. Number four, don't self-deploy. And I think it's really important. So
it's very similar to forest fires in the sense that when drones are in the air that are not sanctioned to be there, the people doing the real work to fight the fire have to come down.
Yeah.
So it can, and I know you mentioned this in the beginning of the podcast, but I just want to reiterate that. That's the kind of effect that it can have if you're not part of the right group and the right process to get the right help to the people.
Yeah. So another thing that I just learned here, thanks to one of our members who just chimed in, listening in really quick, he said, you got to make sure that you take the FEMA ICS-100 class online. It's an emergency management service class that you need to take in order to help out in emergency and disaster areas. So I think it's important. I've got some other comments here. Wow. This is really in, another DroneU member comments. He says, you need basic survival training. I was stuck in an apartment building after my hotel kicked me out in Houston last year. I was able to find an apartment building that they let me use their garbage and had an extra room. Next day, we were trapped by water. I had to ration my food. I had water purification systems and even extra fuel. Unless you have a client that is paying you, please stay home. And it was funny because Nicholas Graham, one of our DroneU students, very helpful to us. He helped us throw that mapping class in Atlanta. He asked me yesterday, he's like, dude, I want to help out. Who do I contact? And, you know, I kind of ignored him for a while. And I said, well, you know, I wouldn't recommend this. And what I said to him was, I said, do you know Nick Osgood? Because Nick is from Drone Base. And I know they're going to be doing a lot of insurance jobs out there. And I said, link up with him. And I said, are you signed up with Uplift? Because I know Uplift has been sending people to different things. I'm not sure that they're sending people to down there. But again, guys, so I think that the steps here, take the ICS 100 test, contact FEMA if you want to get involved. Check out these groups, humanitarian-drones.org. Daniel Herbert, Mark Blacklin, Justin Adams, like they are like the guys. And I'm so grateful that I got to meet, Daniel Herbert way back in the day when we went wakeboarding at Lake Mead after a drone conference. And no, Daniel, you shouldn't post that picture. So
guess what's now getting posted? And by the way, the group is just facebook.com/humanitarian-drones.
Got it. Humanitarian-drones.
No, it's not dash. Humanitarian drones. So it is humanitarian drones. There's no dash in there.
So facebook.com/humanitarian-drones. Okay, done deal.
Right on.
Guys, be smart out there. Be smart out there. Work with, get your FEMA training. Be prepared. it's not easy. It's really not easy. In fact, there were a bunch of people that self-deployed last year, and I got so frustrated. I think I unfriended like all of them.
Well, you know, it's like, tough.
You guys are not helping.
It's tough because people mean well.
Yes.
And they really do want to help, and that is admirable, and we definitely respect that desire. However, do it the right way.
Yes, please do it the right way. And again, guys, thank you so much for listening. If it wasn't for your help, your engagement in the Drone U community and elsewhere, we wouldn't have some of the information that we do. And it's just amazing that this community is doing, you know, what it's doing. I really appreciate that. In fact, there's actually one last thing I wanted to mention. If you are doing search and rescue and you're doing mapping missions and you're actually doing like maybe search and recovery, looking for humans, looking for animals, please don't forget that there is a software program out there. You can reach out to me or PJ Kirkpatrick with Terra Vigilis. We're both involved in this, you know, kind of getting people wrangled up to use this software. I actually just got the software yesterday. Hmm. I think this is a very, very powerful software to help find people. It scans images, one image per 30 seconds, essentially. Actually, no, I got that wrong. One image per 3 seconds. So if you're trying to look for people and things, please reach out to us, or terravigilis.com. Reach out to us. You can use the software. We want to save lives. It is powerful. Let's go ahead and help each other out. All right. Sorry, I wanted to mention that. I totally had forgotten about that. And I think it's just powerful software. We're actually going to be demonstrating that software at a training at the NTSB Training Academy in Ashburn, Virginia, coming up here in December. So if you want to take a look at that software, we're going to leave that open to people who want to come check it out.
Awesome. Fantastic.
Yeah, we'll have more information about that training. We're working out the logistics on some of that stuff. We're going to be partnering with Pix4D, and thanks to the NTSB for hosting the location for us. There's no company affiliation whatsoever. I'm not allowed to. I have to be really careful of the things that I say, but we are, you know, thanks to the NTSB and Pix4D, we're going to be all working together to do a really high-end, super high accuracy mapping training. And it is an honor to be working alongside Pix4D in doing this. So
very much so. Awesome.
Yeah. Anyway, all right, guys. Well, that is going to do it for us today. My name is Paul.
And I'm Rob.
This is Ask Drone U.
We believe that videos, images, words, and sounds have the absolute power to inform, inspire, and entertain. We reject indecision, confusion, and vanity, for they work against the community. We are united under the virtues of safety and knowledge. We are a training community of learners and teachers who encourage and energize each other to achieve greatness. We are pilots, videographers, photographers, freelancers, business owners, enthusiasts, experts, and apprentices. We are creators. We are the Drone U.